No, thank you.
I am in hell. What is going on?
No, stop. Welcome to another episode of Get Your Shine Box. Not an advice show. Ladies and gentlemen, please. Please.
Have we really sunk so low that we need to start to build ourselves up with phony applause? This is amazing.
That's it. I have four buttons at my command.
When we talk about your week this week, are we going to hear some depressing things that you're like so sad that you need that?
That I need to have my own kind of applause track following me around.
I was going to say, like, just put it on like a recording and then, you know, just go whenever you do some sort of menial, mediocre task, you can just like, yes. Yeah, and you fucking nailed it.
Nailed it. Yeah, thank you, everybody.
Not bad.
Well, this is still Get Your Shine Box.
Right.
It is not an advice show, not a movie review show, but really a couple of brothers that, you know, we get together and we mix it up.
We do.
We stir the pot. We kick the hornet's nest. We do all those tropes.
We pivot. We change paradigms.
That's it.
We are here about
synergy.
Yeah, fuck. Kill me. Sorry. You must get all of those terrible buzzwords passed around. Like,
you know what? Working in entrepreneurship is so fascinating because I know all the acronyms. I know all the tropes and things like that. And what's amazing, the amount of businesses right now that are trying to be created to help businesses is incredible. Like I don't know that there's a surge of people that want to work with like medium to small businesses, and I'm gonna help them shape their digital, you know, footprint or blah 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 blah, you know, and that's great.
Yeah,
but there is 1,000 people.
None of this is surprising to me because in my industry, you know, at the last company that I was with, mm-hmm. there was a whole department that was just about like digital.
Yeah.
And like, what does like the flow through look like and how mm-hmm. to sort of maximize all this stuff. And you know what? There's such a lack of pure skill at it. Like a lot of it, people just improvise and come up with things, but to have a truly solid guide points, it's really tricky. And the accumulated knowledge doesn't stick. Because people move to other positions and stuff. So I feel like everyone's always in a bit of a limbo in the right way to approach that. So
that's true. It's true.
Doesn't surprise me, though, that you've got people who are just like, I can capitalize on that.
Know.
I'm like, what do you know about it? Nothing.
Nothing.
But I'm amazing.
It's a core value.
Exactly.
If only there was a...
yeah. What'd you say? I want to talk about that later.
We'll talk about that later.
Sure.
But if only there was a business that would go around and actually build structure around stuff like digital adoption and traction and mm-hmm. take into account change and what that needs to be. An amazing company that focuses on not just the flash in the pan, but actually defining innovation and being able to structure it, map it, measure it.
Well, yes, like your company.
Hey!
tell me about your omnichannel, though, because that's another thing that's really such a big deal. Like, I know that you definitely have an understanding of what tangibly groups can do to try to utilize innovation. But like, how about applying it like internally to like? So do you have like an omnichannel or like a digital sort of pathway that you're also integrating?
Yeah. So it is. We are.
To become a plug for your business.
We do have a digital asset there, but no, we have a methodology. We simplified it.
Okay.
Our whole thing is about simplifying things like that because you got. Well, these companies like ProSci or McKinsey and things like that put in like all these cookie cutter frameworks and stuff. And that's the biggest thing is that A, they don't leverage the biggest asset, which are people.
Mm-hmm.
And B, they also kind of ask you to conform around their structure.
Yep.
Whereas that doesn't always work because people are shifting and things like that.
Of course.
A static environment doesn't exist anymore. There's no such thing as static business. It's always, always fluid and going everywhere. So you need to create systems that handle that, that don't kind of pigeonhole you into one methodology.
Sorry, no, you had me there first.
And then...
kidding. No.
Anyway. But that's... I could talk all day about that because that's all I do all day is talk about that.
Well, you know what? Honestly, I think it's important. Like, we don't... There's a lot of people out there who don't know what the fuck they're doing, and it's very easy to move from paradigm to paradigm. Like, we mm-hmm. see this happen all the time as people are like, again, like, so there's a new fad, people move to the new fad, and then, of course, the fad changes, and it ends up going back to an old fad. Like, it's just...
Well, because nobody wants it. Like, there's an age-old thing, like, it would be great to have an autonomous bus. Like, wouldn't it be awesome? Like, it would do everything. It would, be energy efficient. It would, wouldn't take chances. We wouldn't have to worry about, anything with the autonomous bus. So inventing the autonomous bus makes sense. But if we haven't actually worked out a way for people to want to use the autonomous bus, then And it's not innovation. It's just like a shiny piece of invention.
Right.
So it's about adoption of that thing and then sustainability. And that, I think that's where people miss the mark. And they go, yeah, we need ChatGPT. We need all this stuff. And it's great.
Yeah.
But there's no thought about, forethought about, like, how that's going to integrate into existing systems.
What's the the value proposition, and how will it save time or money or whatever else?
Yeah. It's easy to throw pretty words at you about that. It's like, oh, we're going to save, like, blah, 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 blah. But again, if people aren't going to use it, then why the fuck would you bother?
No. I totally agree. I think people get, anyway, we can go.
We can talk all day about
so, movies.
Anyway, no, so kidding. Tell me about your week.
My week was interesting. I'm in the field now. So I've changed roles a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And now I'm in the field kind of doing sales. So, I don't know. I traveled to Calgary. I had a couple things I needed to do. I went to Lethbridge, which was interesting. I haven't been there in a while. That was fun. But, you know, just kind of getting back in the groove and kind of figuring out my routine.
Yeah,
I was supposed to drive home. This was frustrating.
Yeah.
So I was supposed to go to Calgary beginning of the week. Mm-hmm. It snowed like crazy last weekend. And so the roads were garbage. So I was supposed to go on Monday. I didn't go on Monday, but I got new tires put on my rental vehicle, which is crazy to me. Because why are you giving money to a rental company when they're using shoddy tires? Like, if anything, you should be penalizing them, not, you know, rewarding them with a new set of tires. Anyway, I got that done, and I was going to go to Calgary, then drive back to come and see Scarlett perform her spring play, and then Bree do her skating. And then I was going to drive back that night back to Calgary to have to drive to Lethbridge to drive back to Edmonton again. So anyway, there's hours and hours of driving that's all embedded in this. And what I did end up doing is not doing that. I ended up staying in Calgary and just kind of working away and getting trying to line up a bunch of stuff. But I missed a couple fundamental things, and this part was a little hard. So Scarlett hates being seen to perform. She's actually like, she's got a really nice singing voice. She's really like perfect pitch. Well, I mean, whatever. I'm a dad.
Perfect everything. Perfect everything. We've already booked her on Canadian Idol. And...
effectively, she's a child, you know, pageant kid now.
Pageant kid. No,
it's just like the Amber Dempsey with the big eyelashes. And anyway, there's a little Simpsons for you. But yeah. Anyway, I was sad to miss it because she got really weird because Laura recorded it because I couldn't be there.
Yeah.
And then she got really weird during the performance. Like, she's trying to wave it away, like the camera, because she can see Laura's recording her.
Oh, really?
And she kind of like did a bit of a thing. So this is something where I kind of maybe inadvertently lost some of the magic of what that could have been for her. So I felt a little bad about it. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I wanted to see Bree skate. It would have been lovely just to kind of catch her doing it. It's not like an official competition that she was doing.
Yeah.
But it's like an internal one, and it's good for her to develop confidence. So anyway, she's working on a new routine, and I missed that. So it wasn't a really great dad this week. But I'll try to make up for it next week. Yeah, there's always new stuff I can do.
Sometimes there's weeks like that. And it is. And I think that we probably carry that and make it heavier than it is, maybe. Perhaps. I don't know, but it's just because we're kind of like, I have moments like that where I've missed out on important things, and you're like, oh, this is gonna screw them up forever. And it doesn't necessarily, you know, it will, but it
cumulatively, I mean, if you do enough of it, I think, for sure, like, wow, then you get that consistency of, hey, you know what, my dad's not there.
Then you're a movie trope.
From
Disney, weirdly enough.
What's this?
Disney always has, like, you know, a wayward parent or a dead parent or something like that.
Oh,
like, that's
100%.
Every single animated film, there is some kind of parental, like, tragedy.
Well, that's what all kids experience, so make it relatable, right? There you go. Like, we're not the only failed fathers out there.
No.
Yeah,
but I get it. It feels, you still feel the sting of it, and you're like, ugh.
I think one thing I'm just trying to adapt back to is that I'm not at home all the time. Because it used to be that I would have, well, not all the time, but a lot of my travel would only happen in bursts.
Yeah.
So mostly I was just at the house, like just doing like stuff on Zoom or Skype or whatever else. Skype. Oh my gosh. That is not even functional.
Yeah.
I just went back in time.
Well, you went on your dial-up. You know, and then AOL. And
I'm asking Clippy all kinds of questions. He's got no answers for me. Like, maybe Jeeves knows. I'll ask Jeeves. No.
There you go.
Perfect.
Yeah, but you're maintaining your MySpace page.
Exactly. Thank God. How about you? Tell me about your week.
It's been interesting. Work is in a big flux, and so I got to figure out what's going on there, because there's funding bodies that aren't terribly happy. I've got one of my roles is, it sounds fancy, it's not, entrepreneur in residence.
Oh my God.
At a university.
Here's your ascot and your smoking jacket.
Oh, captain, my captain. As the students stand upon their desks.
Thank God.
Yeah, we should do that film at some point because that's hilarious. That film.
It's funny. So just really quick, quick side segue. I was watching Face Off yesterday, and it was like, I feel like Nicolas Cage has got the same kind of manic energy that Robin Williams does.
Yeah,
but just focused differently, right? Like, I don't think he's comedic, but I think that same sort of frantic, outpour
rhythms, hey, like the weird strange rhythms
a bit. And, anyway, I was just kind of like, oh, this is interesting for me. Anyway, but, please continue.
I was gonna say there's a film Jules and I watched with Cage, and as an older one, as an 80s one, with Michael Biehn.
Oh boy.
Of you know, Terminator,
of course.
But he was like a kind of, it was kind of a noir. He was a con man slash kind of private investigator, and then
Cage or
no Biehn, and then Cage was just this loose cannon. He was a second in command in this kind of cartel thing.
Yes.
And he is off tap, like full on insane Cage, but just so I agree that manic.
You know what? I couldn't actually. I had to turn Face Off off.
Oh,
because just the John Woo of it was so wooey.
Just doves every minute.
Oh, I know, in slow motion and weird. Travolta is not built to be that role. Like,
I know.
This is like 3 years after Pulp Fiction. It's so 97 is Face Off, and I was like, I don't know what to do with you here. Like, you are hamming it up so badly in this. I just wanted to. Anyway, if we do watch it, I think I'm going to be like squirmy.
Yeah, I think so. I think we'll take all the sedatives for that one.
Perfect.
Okay, last thing about my week, kind of kid wise, is just trying to help out my little guy, Jackie. He's struggling a bit at school because all this, and I get it, but like his whole world is like soccer and stuff like that because he's good at it.
Right.
And he's not terribly interested or good at like football.
Okay.
And that's what all the kids are playing right now at school.
Just tell him. It's like, that's like football is like British soccer. That's what they call it. And then he'll be all in.
He doesn't even realize. I mean, they're playing with a soccer ball. It's a soccer ball rules, but they're all, it's footy. It's football. Oh. All of a sudden they have English accents and stuff like
not
that.
Bad.
Like
it'll transform him.
Yeah. Really. So in the end, he's feeling kind of bummed out because they're all loving football. He doesn't like football, and so he doesn't feel like he's got like friends at school and stuff like that, which is kind of a bummer. And so we're like,
I'm sorry, that's
what if we bring another sport, and it's, you got to play it in the snow, like it's got to be something you can play outside, right?
Yep.
So we're trying to think of other sports he could bring and play with, like frisbees or volleyball or something like that, just to kind of see if he can get the kid, like at least one or two kids, kind of excited to play that instead. So we're trying that. It's not really been effective. Anyway, it's just you're like, how do I navigate this? I don't know.
I don't know that you can. I mean, very short amount of time, it's going to be like springtime.
That's
true. And then it'll all change.
How do we know it's going to be spring? Is there some kind of indication that steals
hours?
Oh,
my God. I'm so tired. I was bitter. I was looking at my clock this morning because my alarm went off. And I'm like, why is it so early? It feels early, but it looks late.
Yeah.
I set an alarm for 7:30 because I said, okay, well, definitely going to be recording today. There's no way I'm avoiding this.
Awesome.
And so then I'm like rolling around and I'm a little bit like, because after we went to Nick and Katie's, which you were there for, this is our Laura's cousin. To her parents, her aunt and uncle. Anyway, so we were there, and then we came home, and we had like a little bit, like some champs and stuff. Yeah. And so I was a little like fuzz waking up this morning. I'm just like, oh, this is a nightmare. And then I went downstairs to make coffee, and I'm like, what the fuck? Like the clocks are an hour early. Oh no. Misery.
I know.
Did you see the Geeky Dads had like a thing? I commented on it too. I was just like, oh my God, you have encapsulated how I'm feeling right now, waiting for the coffee to hit my brain.
I know. Yeah. Their game, their Facebook game, their meme game, their social media game's really good.
We have shit the bed on all of that stuff. We need to pick it up.
We do. We do. That's why we've hired an intern. He's here.
Good. What's his name?
It's Jeff, but a G O E F F E Y.
Fire him.
But Jeff.
I'm already confused. I hate it. Like
he's gone. He's
gone. Like Jeffrey, like who used to be like the Toys R Us giraffe? Like,
yeah.
No.
He used to be the Toys R Us giraffe, and now he's just shilling. He's trying to get some work.
I want to. Okay, he's hired again. He's back.
No, he's gone. I fired him.
No, you bring him back.
I did, and then I fired him again.
Perfect.
Just to show him where he sits in the hierarchy of Get Your Shine Box.
Can I just find out how we're going to integrate Jeffrey, the cartoon giraffe, into our Facebook? And like, he's going to be part of our promos now.
That's it? We do. And remember that time we got sued? No, that's in the future. What?
Which? All right, what's the movie?
All right, so we're continuing our month of Cusack. Over 3 months.
I love the irony of that. Yeah. Perfect. Okay.
And so we're landing on, this is one of my favorite films of all time.
Yeah.
It's just like every time I watch this, I feel smarter about music, although I'm not. I just feel like I am.
Totally.
Because you kind of borrow their kind of knowledge and acumen. And you can tell, like, it was written by someone who's just absolutely loves, like, music.
Yeah.
And so there's some good stuff. So it is High Fidelity.
Yay!
Yeah, which I thought was the very first Jack Black film, but it's not.
Okay.
But it's the first time I really kind of
100%
recognized him. Yeah. And you know what? It might be Cable Guy might be actually earlier than that. I don't know.
Could be.
Because he's in that too. He's got a whole... He's been acting for a while, so...
He has, but it's funny because in my mind still, he seems relatively new.
Yeah.
Like, no matter what, I'll see him in something, I'm like, oh, yeah, he's only been around for a bit. And then you see his, like, gray, scraggly beard, and he's an old geezer.
Yeah.
Like, he's, not a young man anymore, so...
No.
But he keeps stuff... He's an interesting guy. I actually really enjoy his stuff, and I really like him in this.
Yeah,
He left a great impression.
Oh, my God. He's fantastic in this. And so is... Dick is so good.
Yep.
I don't know the actor's name off the top of my head, but he is the perfect antithesis to Jack Black. Like, they are just so good together.
And fun to watch them, like, kind of play off one another, too. They must have had a ball filming this.
Yeah. Oh, honestly. Yeah. Everybody in this is just fun to watch. There's not a single person where I'm like, you drag this a bit.
When does Jack Black get annoying, though? Like, he must be, like, some stuff where he's just kind of doing a shtick.
Yeah.
And you might... Potentially, I don't know. I don't know what he's like when he's not on.
Yeah,
but I would find it hard sometimes.
Maybe, you know, I'm sure it would wear thin.
Good.
You know, I'm sure I wear thin. I doubt it.
Finally, we can talk about the curtain. The curtain is pulled back.
No, you're operating the levers. So I want you, to you know, surmise this film. I want you to encapsulate it, to nutshell this fucker.
Got it.
But you know what? I had such a joy in this, and we have such a huge amount of time to record anyway
today. We don't. You're off to the water park in almost no time. Don't worry. This is my fault again for sort of choosing.
It's not your fault. It's time change fault.
Okay, well, we'll blame the time change gods. Like, why? Rue the day, Zeus.
No kidding. It's the farmers and the cows.
Why are we in the pocket of Big Farm still?
I don't know. Oh, because, man. I guess we eat food.
It's all that cheddar that they're producing.
That's it.
Sorry, there's too much Breaking Bad lately. I'm still using some of their mad cheddar, yo.
Oh, I love those guys. Is that like Pinkman's
buddies? Yeah, Skinny Pete and Badger?
Yeah,
it's pretty fun.
I love Badger. Actually, I love Badger on The Office. He's good. He's one of Dwight's cousins.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's Moe's and then him.
Oh.
And they're both like, I think he was describing himself one time. He's like, you know. Moe's obviously the deep thinker, the creative, you know. There's Dwight, who's the looker, and then there's me, the comedian. Talking about their dynamics, and it's fucking genius.
Where is that guy now? Like,
I don't know.
I haven't seen Badger in anything, really.
No, I haven't seen him in a while.
I like his style, though. I think he's got a cool delivery.
I like him too, but I don't, I couldn't tell you. Yeah.
Okay. I'm at the part of Breaking Bad now where it's just like, it's just wrapping up. There's like two episodes left of the season, and every second is tense. So I do it on the elliptical. I'm watching Breaking Bad, and I'm just like, oh my God. I notice like your heart rate is up. I'm like pounding away. Like,
it's just warnings. No, beep, 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 beep.
No kidding. I've got like a little burn marks in the carpet, like just from, zipping through. It's honestly, it's so tense right now.
Oh my God. These catastrophic warnings
kind
of thing.
My Apple Watch just like sending out a signal into space just to say like, hey man, this guy's a trouble. Yeah.
Were you about to do a bananas?
I was about to do a bananas. Like, tense. Chew the glass.
Right. That's a great.
How much time do I have to encapsulate this?
Oh, well, let's go. You know what? Let's go like a solid 4.
Okay, I could do 4.
And go.
Opening. No. So, of course, so High Fidelity. It's about this guy Rob who loves music and so opens up on a spinning vinyl. You know, just on a turntable. And of course, he's going through some stuff. And here's a guy like listening to his headphones. He's obviously the song's playing as You're Gonna Miss Me, Baby. So it's very much in line with kind of there's a breakup going on, right?
Yeah.
And, he, you know, he's talking a lot sort of about like the power of music. And in this sense, it's about depressing, right? Like he's sort of like, why do people never talk about depressing music and what kind of crimes it causes or, you know, suicides or other things, right? Like, who cares about guns? Let's talk about music and its effect. And I think it's interesting because, I think that this is due to a degree as well, but music has such a profound effect on me. Like it, I will like, without warning, I'll be listening to something and I'll be like teary. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? But it just, something about it, it has a very visceral effect on me.
Yeah.
So he's obviously someone who feels the same. And I mean, his whole life is structured around music, and we'll get into more details about it. But
yeah,
suddenly his girlfriend whips his headphones off as he's listening away. And this is Laura. That's the name of the girl.
Yeah.
And so she's got her bags. She's getting ready to leave and slams a door. And then so Rob basically goes into his life story framed around music and breakups.
Yeah.
Because his whole sort of journey through life has been, you know, framed around these different relationships and how he has either endured or changed based on what those have had an impact on him.
Yeah.
And it's funny because he also has like a very much a rose-colored glasses view of things, right? Like, so
kind of him as a victim, maybe.
Definitely. Yeah. You could definitely see some of that. But he also sort of elevated people. Like when he's thinking backwards in this moment, he's like, okay, well, then there's all these sort of big moments that happened to me over time. And then he gets like sort of integrated into going back and then revisiting these people that have sort of, and then coming to terms with what they were really like.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I think it's a great journey of awakening that he goes on. So anyway, he goes, go ahead.
Oh, I just want to say, I was trying to think like, because, you know, and you can see every time he talks about, one of the times that he's, you know, his relationships and stuff like that. I mean, his clothing directly reflects a musical kind of style of that era as well.
Yeah.
That's what I noticed. Yeah, kind of thing.
Well, he's dressed in the time, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you could say 80s, but I know that, or you know, whatever kind of era he's talking about. But I know that like what he's wearing is always band related.
Okay. Yeah.
Kind of neat, which is neat. And I was thinking like, oh, like everything's kind of around music, you know, that's his big North Star. So each of these relationships are a playlist, essentially, that he's assembled about their attributes and things like that, or different aspects of this playlist.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I just like music and its influence and its kind of driver for him is threaded throughout this entire kind of movie. Anyway, I love that it's all driven from that. And if we could unpack it, I'm sure there's so many little Easter eggs about what he was listening just before, what the soundtrack was playing just before a certain incident happened.
Yeah. Oh, there are greater nerds than us who have probably dissected this to death.
That's it. Yeah.
But it's true. I mean, again, I think there was really a lot of thought that was put into how it was composed and probably, so it's based on a book.
Hmm.
So in the book, I think, you know, the details are probably kind of embedded in such a way, but then adapted for film, because you can do things with soundtrack you can't do in a book, right?
Yeah.
Especially, you know, how does the music kind of play into what's going to happen? So,
yeah.
Anyway, he's like, all right, I'm on a desert island, top five breakups. And the first one he talks about is Allison Ashmore.
Yeah.
So this is a girl who kind of taps him on the shoulder and then takes him away and just starts making out with him for like 6 hours.
Yeah.
And then, you know, suddenly there's a new guy in place and he's like, his thoughts were, and this is interesting, is like there seems to be an element of that afternoon in every relationship since.
Yeah.
And you talk a little bit about victimhood, right? Like he's always just kind of like, well, but this is funny actually, because especially in light of Gross Point Blank.
Yeah.
It's not me.
It's not me. Yeah. It's another kind of avoidance or diverting of that responsibility.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, you know, we talked about this when we were actually watching the show, but it's almost like, if you would have taken the character from Better Off Dead and he goes one direction and he becomes Martin and he's like super focused, right? He's got a very clear directive about what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
But this is the other way. Like what if Lane had just become a slacker and had kept going in that trajectory? This is kind of what he would have been like. So it forms a neat nexus point into like the way the Cusack could have, you know, hit that character Lane could have developed into something different.
I love that he is one person. He's one character, Lane, essentially.
Yep.
And these are all the different, like, multiverses that Lane... I love that idea. Like,
effectively.
Say anything. It's still kind of high schoolian there, and that's Lane, like, moving on to another relationship.
Yep.
Or Midnight in a Garden of Good and Evil, he becomes a journalist.
Right.
Kind of thing. Or in Con Air, he becomes a superhero somehow.
So we talked about how Savage Steve Holland, that, you know, in Better Off Dead, that's probably autobiographical for him.
Yeah.
I wonder how much the casting of Cusack actually this has affected how Cusack became, like who he started to emulate in future roles.
Oh, possibly.
Anyway, I think you're always, as an actor, going to be part of, like, there's a core element of yourself in anything that you portray. You can't get that far away from you.
Yeah.
But it just, I find it funny, or not funny, but just kind of cool how that Lane Meyer character prototype is sort of built into these other
characters. He's in everything.
Yeah. It is.
In the movie The Raven about Edgar Allan Poe, it's with Lane decided to become Edgar Allan Poe.
So deep, you know, deep psychological break, but, and he just assumes another identity.
That's, yeah, but there is. There's always that element, and I'd like to associate it with Lane. I like that, rather than be like, oh, this is just, you know, this is how John Cusack acts.
Yeah.
You know, this is just him. It's like, no, actually, I like the idea that it is. It's Lane.
Anyway, yeah. Anyway, just a thought. But, yeah. So anyway, then the next relationship he goes into is Penny Hardwick, who had great taste in music.
Yeah.
And she was nice. She's like really cool, but she's also a bit like a bit frigid for him.
Yeah. I mean, he talks about like, and it's all from his like narration point of view. He breaks the fourth wall the entire time, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Even when people are in the same scene with him, he'll go and he'll break it.
Totally.
Obviously, all the music is diegetic. Like it's anyway. Can't say enough. But yeah, I like that. So he's now narrating from the point of view of a high school kid that is just a massive hornball. Like they're just women. All of a sudden you're noticing them more. And
you're right. Well, he sort of says like the breasts were rightfully ours, but we couldn't get to them. So he's like, I get, you know, at that age too, of course, hormones, like this is all playing into it. And he really likes this girl, but you know, he kind of breaks her heart a little bit just to punish her for not allowing kind of her, not allowing access.
Yeah. And he justifies it too. Like he's like, well, you know, like everybody said that she'd put out or that like.
Later that's the girl he dates afterwards. Like he tries to go to someone who would put out.
No. That's Penny. I'm sure the high school girl. Yeah. Are you sure?
A positive. Because after she ends up having sex with the first guy after him, right?
Yeah.
After like three dates.
Yeah.
So I think that she doesn't put out, like she literally.
No, but that's everybody said.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Like that's there's a line there where people are like, everybody said that she'd, you know, she.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, kind of put out and stuff like that.
Okay.
Anyway, but yeah, like he wants more of her than she's prepared to give, and he doesn't narrate the fact that he's a massive jerk to her.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Well, but you get some of that reflection later.
Yeah.
Which is nice. I mean, so we'll talk about that when we get there.
Yeah. Anyway.
So yeah. Anyway, he breaks up with her, in his mind at that time, she breaks up with him.
Yes.
And so then he's hurt by this, and so he, you know, goes on his own kind of journey. Anyway, flashback to now, he works at owns a store called Championship Vinyl, and a very niche clientele that comes to the store with some specific things, and then you get a chance to kind of meet his group. And so the first one who comes in is Dick. You're right, and he's a very meek, very quiet, you know, he just sort of comes in one day looking for rare vinyl and, you know, vintage things and stuff.
Yeah.
And he's always making them tapes, which is cool. Like, do you remember making tapes as a kid?
I did. You know, I wasn't as good. You know, I was actually envious of your ability to make playlists and tapes and things like that, because there was thought put in. I think I just jumbled mine together from like, hey, I like this song. I like this song. There was no cohesiveness to it.
Yeah.
But you always made really good mixtapes.
Oh, thank you.
Because there's always a theme, and I think they need themes. And so this is Dick coming in and making a mixtape theme. But like, what was that process like for you to make a mixtape?
You know, it's a really good point. I think I always believed in flow.
Yeah.
So for me, I didn't want like a bunch of super energetic songs kind of mashed together all at once because I find it jarring and exhausting. Mm-hmm. Whereas I like to build. So I'll start off with something that kind of introduces the mix, depending on what the theme of the mix is going to be. Mm-hmm. And then build up. And then you need to drop it. Like I get to an apex and then I want to slow it down because then it forces you to kind of like at least savor the last moment of that energy. Mm-hmm. And then you build back up again. And I like to have it go in waves. And then a nice sort of it can be a kind of a send-off song that sort of drifts like or wraps the whole thing up, or you leave it on a high energy. Like it's, I don't know. Anyway, it's always a bit of depending what the material you've got to work with.
Yeah, it's a science though. Like, and that people don't realize that. They don't think about like, this is actually a bit of a science to this, to make like a really good tape that gets you, that is the soundtrack of your life at that moment.
Correct.
And I think that's what, like I didn't get, is that this is a collection of songs I like versus this is actually kind of, this is the music that's playing in the background when someone's watching my movie almost in a way.
Yeah.
And I never thought of it that way.
But this has probably happened to you too. Like, there have been albums that out that became soundtracks of a time, right? Like, like of a summer, or like, I remember when Up to Here, the Tragically Hip album came out, we had played the living shit out of that album.
Yeah.
Like, it was at every party that we went to, and we weren't partier partiers. When I say party, I just mostly get togethers.
Yeah.
Because we were theater nerds. We didn't do it. We
watch part. Musicals and cry.
Oh, I know. I'm kidding. I love you. Or, yeah, or stupid Monty Python.
Yeah.
Like, everyone, like, mimicking and aping some of that stuff. But there was like that album.
Yeah.
There was interesting. Rob Ias and I have a thing about it's not coming to me the name of the band, but
it's okay, a
song. Oh, The Pursuit of Happiness.
Yes,
there was that the second album, I believe, or first album.
Yeah,
like Hard to Laugh. And anyway, that it was interesting because it like almost song for song, something would affect us that was happening in our lives. I think we played that album so much that we started to live out the tracks of the album. It was really screwy. Like we ended up like swapping girlfriends at one point. Like we dated like the other person's girlfriend like immediately after one. It was just weird.
Yeah.
But that was one album where you think, oh my God, that soundtrack has absolutely framed a point in time.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, I mean, Fully Completely was when I really started to get into the hip, I think. That one. But I think one that really, in kind of more recent sense, is there's an Aussie guy, Bernard Fanning.
Okay.
And Jules had that CD. It was the one CD she actually brought with her from Australia when she did her like world tour when I met her. And that CD became like the soundtrack of our relationship.
Interesting.
Early days. Yeah. And we played it to death. And it's an awesome. It's one, like, I think it's his first solo album.
Okay.
I can't remember what it's called. But that album. So same. Yeah. Like they become almost, milestones in where you are at that time. And the fact that you guys were able to like, almost like, holy shit, they're writing this as like for us, or they like saw our future and they created these songs.
It was creepy.
Yeah.
I think that's, and just, this is my last comment on this before I return to the movie, but there's something that's going to get lost about listening to albums, because I'm thinking now about even how I do Spotify, and everything is track. It's like track.
Yeah.
And so even framing the time doesn't happen the same way. And I think there's so many middle tracks or lost tracks where you're like, I would feel lost not knowing about that song. I feel like there was something that is fundamentally missing. And that's just not the reality of how we're absorbing media and music right now. It's really, it's actually kind of sad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've got a turntable. Our other brother, Chad, keeps that kind of thing alive. And I'd love to go there and do kind of that, it's not record roulette, but just like how you kind of take turns. You put your quarter on the machine, as it were.
Yeah.
You know, like you guys used to do. You used to kind of like...
We did a lot of that. But it wasn't also albums either. It was just track for track.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. No, we wouldn't just play like a whole album through. That said, I've done this before where I think it was Exile in Main Street. Mm-hmm. One time, Jeff Matthews, who's a friend of mine I used to work with, ended up moving back to South Africa, where he's got like a whole life. And like I get calls from him sometimes at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
And because he's like... drunk out of his skull. Like he's like drunk or high or whatever. He's just like, and he'll be like, hey, bro. Like he's a crazy man. And I love the guy to death, but it's just like, we listened to Exile on Main Street with, we were like, had some pot.
Yeah.
And it was
some pot, some marijuana.
Some, yes.
No, hit a marijuana cigarette.
A doobie. But honestly, it was awesome. It just kind of like rolled over that, because I hadn't ever listened to that album entirely.
Yeah.
And the first time I did it with him, and we were just like, it was awesome. It was phenomenal. I'm like, holy shit. And it's not that it's Exile on Main Street. It's not full of like big, you know, Rolling Stones hits.
Yeah.
But just lots of really cool music.
Yeah.
So that's, again, there's going to be experientially things that are lost, or it's worthwhile bringing them back.
Yeah, I think so.
Sorry about that.
So no. So Dick has made a mixtape for Rob.
Yep.
He puts it on and you can like Rob already, you know, he just exudes awe, like social awkwardness.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of like, hey, so... Dick's like, hey, so, you know, we were going to go check out a band later. So you can come if you want, you know?
Yep.
And it's just... And you know, Rob's just like, uh-huh.
And then in comes Jack Black.
Yeah.
And so they're listening to Bill and Sebastian is the song that's playing at the time. And this is one that, you know, Dick had put on. And this guy, Barry, who is Jack Black's character, is like, that song sucks ass. And so he throws on Katrina and the Waves and he starts like humping. And he's just like, he's a big ball of energy. Like you say, he's the exact antithesis of Dick.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think, again, he's trying to think about the power of music. And in this case, I mean, Katrina and the Waves, it's obviously it was a big hit, but that's a pretty obnoxious song. Like, it's just really there. And the way that he's like playing it too, like max volume, you know, super kinetic. Yeah. I think he's just really trying to stimulate stuff. And I think that's, again, the power of music. Like, it just such an ability to have a visceral reaction to it or cause people to think or to hate it or whatever.
Or conversation.
Exactly.
Like, that's the big thing that they do together is come up with your top five songs, albums, whatever, for a certain situation. That's an ongoing theme throughout the entire film.
Yep. And so then Rob sort of mentions too, he's like, hey, I can't even fire these guys, like, because I hired them for 3 days a week and they just keep showing up. So, but that's, they're just so passionate about it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so on to number three. So this is the third breakup. He's talking about Charlie Nicholson. And she's like, she was different. She was dramatic. She was exotic.
Yeah.
And this is played by?
Selma Hayek. No. Sorry. Oh, my God.
Are you confusing your spell? It's Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Morgan Freeman.
No, okay. Oh, my God. Mr. T. Yeah.
Oh, God. I do this to Jules all the time because she'd be like, is that Lawrence Fishburne or is that, you know, Samuel Jackson? It's really funny.
They're all the same.
Oh, no. They no.
That
no.
is terrible. Oh, my gosh. Oh, anyway. I'll tell you something later on.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, so yeah, anyway, she was like, she's super interesting and she's, again, like exotic and stuff. And he's like, and this has probably happened. Have you ever dated someone so out of your league that you couldn't get comfortable with it?
Yeah. Where they're just like this confidence and things like that. It's happened. It was really brief, but I've had this kind of situation where you're like, this is so out of my league. And I'm just my guts are turning because I'm just like, I'm not worthy.
This is it. Like, and I think when you always have this fear, like that you're going to do something dumb or you're going to blow it, and you're like, maybe this is the one chance you'll ever have of being with like a superstar.
Yeah. It's funny because you inevitably then kind of sabotage it. At least I did.
No, but he does.
He does
like, it
too.
Exactly happens. Exactly. So he's worried about his abilities as a lover.
Yeah.
And then so, you know, she was just so next level. Anyway, so she ends up like leaving him for the guy that he feared that she would go with.
Marco.
That's right. My favorite line in this though is, you fucking bitch. Let's work it out. How would that work? Like, you've just completely shot her, and now you want to try to pull her back in. This is this is how men think. We're idiots, super idiots. It's incredible.
So in this stage, I forgot to mention, because I wanted to kind of highlight again what he's wearing and kind of the things. So I think like in the first flashback when he's there, I want to say it's a little emo-ish. It's not emo-ish at that time, so it'd be kind of like almost Cure kind of idea. Like he's got kind of like a bit longer hair. He's a bit more of that scrub, I guess. With the other girl, I think it's kind of 80s, so he's kind of more poppy.
Yep.
But in this one with Charlie, he's wearing like the leather jacket and he's kind of got that.
Oh yeah, but kind of a push forward emo hair. Yeah,
kind of thing.
Yep.
Anyway. So go ahead.
Yeah. So then flashback to regular time. You get the sense. So he flunks out of school and then he learns you don't punch above your weight. Like try to find someone kind of, you know, who you think you fit closer to.
Yeah.
Anyway, ironically, Laura calls the store.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, Rob has to talk to her and just another guy in the interim kind of comes in and he's looking for an album. He's looking for, I just called to say I love you. And so Jack Black goes up and down him. He's like, just totally takes a strip off of him and like, just.
Anyway. It's for my daughter. Oh, I'm sorry. Is she in a coma?
Pretty much.
So funny.
But I think there's some snobbery that kind of comes with music in general. Like if you know things, then you're like, why don't other people know things? And you should be ashamed of yourself for thinking that that's good.
I've
probably been guilty of that from time to time where you just, and maybe about 15-ish years ago, I was really kind of listening to music that was coming in from kind of obscure circles and trying to put stuff together. And I was trying to push that out. I was like, okay, well, hey, I made you a disc or I made you tape.
Oh, nice.
I would give that to like even guys I was working with at the time. And some of it was just, it was too obscure.
Yeah. Nordic death metal.
Basically, but all midgets. And then you would feel like, well, you're an idiot then for not kind of seeing it. I think snobbery kind of comes with getting a lot of different influences coming through and then being like looking down a bit on what's being played on the radio.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Because you do. You got this kind of, I don't know, maybe superiority. And well, and it's magnified when you see this film and the fact that they are like, because I think Rob comes in is like
why did you do that?
Why did you do that?
Yeah.
You know,
he calls him out. Like, so then actually Barry doesn't take that very well. And he starts mocking his sweater.
Oh yeah. Like, just, that's a terrible sweater.
He's got nothing else to come with. Anyway. So finally Rob admits to Dick that, you know, he and Laura have broken up. And of course Dick is awkward as hell. He's like, hey, do you want to talk about it or something? Anyway. So Rob goes home. He turns on some Springsteen. Of course, naturally the music of breakup, because I mean, Springsteen's such a, he knows how to capture, you know, sort of, very graphically kind of what's going on. Like, I love his writing style. So he's playing some of that, and then, you know, he's gathering up some of Laura's stuff and like smells her clothes, because you know, you could tell, like, he for all of his bravado, he's definitely missing her. He's already sort of said like that she didn't make the top five list. He's kind of like, whatever, said this.
Does he go into number four then?
So this is Sarah. So
grunge phase, by the way.
That's right. So he's talking about being in mourning, and this is interesting, right? Like, so have you ever done this? Have you ever dated someone on the rebound just to have like someone to sort of help you push through?
And it's never pretty.
No.
And he admits, like they both, she had a massive breakup, he had a breakup, they were bitter. And they just kind of found solace together in how they, and their whole relationship was built on how they could complain about the previous kind of partner. Stuff, right?
Well, it's funny because when I met Laura on the plane, we were both coming out of relationships. And so I was like, I was thinking about this as I'm watching. I'm like, oh shit, when is the, like, you know, the other, you know, sort of Damocles going to fall on us? Not that it is. It's, you know, things are great, but it just, it was interesting because I mean, that's not a great way to start a relationship for sure. Anyway, so cut back to Rob. The segment with Sarah is actually really short. And then when he goes to revisit her later, it's quite telling how reality is so much different than kind of how he's imagining it. But so Rob's reorganizing his vinyl. But how is he doing it? Do you remember?
So it's not alphabetical.
Correct.
It's not, I forget the other kind of thing. But
chronological.
It's autobiographical.
I know. Super cool.
Yeah.
That would be such a fun challenge. I mean, my music collection's nowhere near as replete as that guy's is. But man, that'd be kind of an interesting exercise,
right?
I wish I had the time, for one, like with kids, fucking not a chance. Just even the mental energy to devote to it.
I used to do that with my comic collection.
Oh, yeah.
I used to organize it because it was, it's bigger. I have some of it here, but it really was bigger at some point. But through time, it's gone.
I've actually got some of your stuff, I think.
Well, hang on to it. Keep it safe. Keep it secret. I used to do that. And it's actually, it's pretty soothing to go to a collection and kind of organize. Like, I'm actually kind of starting to do it with the RPGs over there, like by genre and themes and stuff like that, but there is something really like soothing about doing that. So when I see that scene, like, I love his collection's incredible. I love what he's doing, but I also get it. Like, it kind of, there is such a ritual, and it is so satisfying to take a collection and then organize it in a certain way, and then look at the kind of end product.
Yeah. Well, I think it's also a reflective exercise too, obviously, because you go through and think, okay, well, how does that fit autobiographically?
Oh yeah.
Anyway, so Rob, believe it. Oh my God. I think good for you. I think that's awesome. Anyway, Rob's mom calls.
Yeah.
And so now he has to explain that Laura left. His mom starts crying.
Oh yeah.
And she's like, he has a pattern. I mean, I think this is exactly him. Like, he's not great at keeping relationships. So based on this great call with his mom, he decides to actually go with Dick to the show that they talked about when he first came into Championship Vinyl. And he runs into Lisa Bonet. And so she's singing up there doing Peter Frampton. And oh my God, Lisa Bonet is like, she is beautiful.
Stunning.
Like, there is there's a painting somewhere of her that is aging, and she is not. Like, this is a Dorian Gray kind of like Faustian bargain that she has made and passed on to her daughter. Because Zoe Kravitz is like still same thing. Crazy, crazy pretty.
Yeah.
But anyway, so, you know, he's kind of up there kind of taking her all in. And then she ends up like inviting her to come to Championship Vinyl.
That's right. Yeah. She gets an album signed by her. And it's funny seeing like Dick and Barry as well. Just they're all just like completely entranced by her.
Mesmerized. It's pretty... pretty cool though.
It's like, pretty cool. I love it. I used to hate this song. Yeah. Now I kind of like it. Yeah.
Totally. It's funny how delivery can change everything, right? Like, whoever's kind of singing the song.
That's
And she gives it a really cool spiel. I actually like that song. Baby, I Love Your Way.
Yeah.
Anyway, so back to Rob.
Quick, sorry. Yeah, quick sidebar.
Yeah, do it.
Is there a song that you did not like, but now after someone has covered it, you're like, oh, I love this song?
This has happened to me a couple of times where I didn't know who originally sang it, and I heard the cover, and I believed it was the person who did the cover who it was the original.
Yeah.
So, for example, the song Sweet Thing is a Van Morrison song, and I had no idea that it existed. But Mom, years ago, had the Waterboys, that first album of theirs. It's called Fisherman's Blues.
Yeah, yeah.
And she played that album to death, and they do a cover of that song, which is so beautiful and heartfelt. Like, I used it in my wedding.
Yeah.
It's honestly, and then I heard the Van Morrison song. I'm like, what the fuck is this? It actually made me dislike, not dislike the song, but I dislike his version relative to the Waterboys one.
Yeah.
But it's only because I knew that to be, in my mind, the original.
Yeah.
So that's happened to me. How about you?
Oh, the one that leaps out is a little more recent is when Johnny Cash did Hurt.
Oh, yeah.
And who was the original? Tool?
No, it's Nine Inch Nails.
Nine Inch Nails, sorry. And I was like, I was never a huge Nine Inch Nails fan.
Me neither.
But hearing that song now, I cannot get enough of it.
Oh, there's guys who own those tracks when they cover them, right?
Like, yeah,
that doesn't happen that often.
No.
But a good cover. I honestly seek them out all the time.
Yeah.
Just to sort of say, like, how is this different? Or how have they kind of either arranged it in such a way?
Yeah.
To give it a little bit more.
The Aussie radio station Triple J have a section that is always dedicated to Like a Virgin.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they uncover phenomenal covers.
It's a great radio station. Stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway.
So we cut. This is like Rob gets a call from Liz.
Yeah.
Joan Cusack, his sister. Second time that she's showing up in the movies that we've chosen.
Yeah.
And they're fun to watch. Like, again, I can see why he keeps like having her cast and stuff, because they have such a great repartee.
They do. Yeah,
anyway, she's like, oh, I'm not picking sides. And, you know, she's like just really trying to like, she's obviously a friend of Laura's.
Yeah.
And just kind of like trying to get to the bottom of what's going on. Yeah. I love when the reveal of what Rob has actually done to Laura comes out and Liz hears it. Anyway, we'll get to that.
That is brilliant.
And so anyway, so back to Laura. So Laura comes in and he's asking her if she still loves him. And then, you know, she just says, like, we just don't get along anymore.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, every relationship goes through these little periods where you're just like, you know, you're going to have ups, you're going to have downs. I always know for me, too, like, if I'm ever in a rocky spot, I always tend to lean back into something else. Like, I'll lean into my work or I'll lean into something, you know, external. Mm-hmm. Because it's the same amount of energy, but sometimes you just need to pour it into something different.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and you kind of, like, you're in a relationship long enough, you're going to kind of change a little. You're going to evolve. That's just the way we're kind of built. And it doesn't excuse anything, and I'm not trying to. But essentially, you kind of glob onto something that wasn't there at the beginning. You know, necessarily, like a new hobby, a new something, and something that might define you a little more.
Yep.
And you really kind of latch onto that because you're like, yeah. And then it can seem like you're becoming kind of a different person, I guess, but not really. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
No, I know where you're going with this, but it's interesting you're talking about change because Laura accuses Rob of not evolving. Yes. She really says that you want things to stay static and not change. And I think, you know, I don't know what he's holding on to, because up to now, he really hasn't had anything great in the past that's really pushing him.
Yeah.
And she also mentions, I don't know if it's here or maybe later, but, you know, he used to have ideas. He used to have ambitions. Yeah. And I think that's what attracted her to him.
Yeah.
But is that just something you say to like get girls to like you?
I don't know. I mean, she discovered him when he was at like a position of kind of, I don't know, not authority, but like he was shiny. He was a DJ and things like that. So he was showing like skill and acumen and musical knowledge. And he was able to like be charming and stuff like that. And then they never really talk about why he phased out of that kind of thing. Maybe just dedicated himself to the store. Like, who knows?
I think so. Yeah. I just think he got like locked into being cool.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just too cool to do anything else. And again, if he's trying to stay static, you don't want to lose that. I mean, just turned 50.
Yeah.
I can see it. I can totally see, like, now, I never used to think so much about aging. It was like, okay, well, it's happening, and all right, 40, it sucks. And, you know, even when I was 20 and turned 30, I was like, that sucks. But 50's like, it's got a different kind of suck. Mm. Like, where now I'm like, 20 years from now, it could die.
Yeah.
And you just sort of go, okay, well, what are the little things? And also, this doesn't help, but as you're reading through, like, news feeds or whatever else, or celebrities, people in their 50s die all the time. Like, it's a little bit alarming. I've taken a different tack on health recently, like trying to do a lot more exercise and a lot more like thought about diet. Not that I'm adhering really well to a diet per se, but I'm definitely looking at stuff. I'm reading stuff, labels.
There you go.
No kidding. Yeah. What the interweb has to say. I noticed that a lot more exercise comes into my newsfeed all the time now. Wow, okay. Like, this is, I'm thinking about it more than I thought I was.
Yeah. I get a lot of stuff around erectile dysfunction.
Well, we all know why.
Because my algorithms, what do you do? You say it out to the world, Google's listening.
Gross. Yeah.
Gross. But yeah, and I think during this scene, he, you know, after that conversation, we get to know him a little more. But then to us, he admits that the top fifth breakup is just irrelevant. It was fine. It was mutual. And that he just didn't want to put her in the top five because it was so painful.
Right. Exactly. Kind of thing. So, yeah. And then there's like a little bit more that happens in the record store with Snobbery again.
Oh, yeah,
like this excessive customer comes in. So anyway, it's no big deal. But
I love that the guy who's, because Jack Black's on a rant and he's trying to like, they're talking about their a top five of some sort. And Rob's going through it. And Barry starts making fun of him, and the guy behind him who's floating, like, excuse me, you said that you had a first pressing of
Totally.
And he's like, just a minute.
Yeah. Just loves to toy with the guy. Like,
oh, yeah.
I'm not going to sell it to you this week.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You said that last week.
Yeah.
Maybe come in a week.
Totally. So anyway, so Liz calls again.
Yeah.
And they're talking away, and she's like, yeah, you know, I really don't think very much of this Ian guy.
Oh, yeah.
And you finally find out that actually Laura has moved in with this guy, Ian. And
yeah.
So then he loses his shit. And then, but at the same time, Maria, like Lisa Bonet, comes into the record store.
Yeah.
So anyway, he's like trying to be cool, and but he needs to figure out who this fucking Ian guy is. So he goes on this big diatribe. Yeah, and then Ian Raymond is the guy's name, and so he ends up going back to the apartment, and then sees a piece of his mail, and anyway, he listens to world music, and he wears rings. Like, in his mind, this is the worst of the worst.
Yeah.
So, and then they sort of reflect back to, like, they used to listen to Ian have sex upstairs when they were in bed together, and anyway, it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
So,
and that happens all before he kind of puts her there. Yeah. Is this when he's imagining? That great line when he's imagining them together.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And he's like, no sex is better than the sex you have with Ian. Like, and so he's just like pounding
That's
on.
It.
Like,
in my mind.
In my mind. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, for
so
sure.
So good. Yeah.
Yeah. So for
so
sure,
that's when she.
Then he says like Jackie Alden was the other one, but honestly, that doesn't matter because honestly, Laura was the hardest. And then now we sort of go in more in depth into their relationship and a little bit more about kind of how that all came together.
Yeah. So we get to explore. We get to see them, how they met. He made her a mixtape. That's kind of his go-to move.
Yeah.
With ladies.
Yep.
Is he makes them a tape kind of thing. And then they started to get together and...
Yeah. And they have good chemistry. They move in. I mean, it's pretty good. But then you find out, like, so Liz comes storming up to him like, you asshole. And so then you find out the four bad things that he did to Laura to kind of cause this breakup or seed it.
Yeah.
So the first one was he slept with someone else when she was pregnant.
Yeah.
Secondly, the affair contributed to the termination of the pregnancy.
Yep.
He borrowed $4,000 from her that he hasn't paid back.
Yeah.
And he also told her that he was unhappy and looking for someone else.
Yeah.
Suicide. One of those things is suicidal, let alone the four. And she still stuck around.
Oh,
this
is
insane. Yeah. Anyway, then he goes into the justification. So,
They were on a break. They had kind of separated or something.
So
and that's why he slept with someone.
He didn't know that she was pregnant at the time.
Yeah.
So, And so she just sort of said, like, looking around for someone else, you know, kind of unhappy. Would you ever think about meeting someone else? And that she was thinking about others. And he goes, well, of course, it's a trap.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, well, maybe I'm thinking about others, too. And so, yeah, then this whole thing about the pregnancy comes up.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's pretty bad. He does end up justifying the things that he said.
Yeah.
But it's still not great.
Like, it's still not great. Yeah.
So he, in an effort to kind of clean up his terrible history, he decides to call these old girlfriends that he'd broken up with and then figure them out.
Yeah.
And see what happens. So the first girl that he dated, the one for 6 hours,
End
up getting together with this guy, Kevin Bannister.
Yeah.
And so it turns out she marries Kevin Bannister.
Yeah.
The first person right after him.
Yeah. Right out of school.
Yep.
And he's like, who does that?
No one.
So in his mind, she was kind of a little broken anyway.
Yep.
Marrying the first guy out of like grade school kind of thing.
Yeah. And so she tries to call her, but ends up speaking to her mother.
Yeah. Mother.
And then she just like, nope, that's the only boyfriend she's ever had. One person. He's like, he's not even a, He's not even a historical fact. He's not even like a footnote in her history. It's interesting.
But because she was off, because something was wrong with her, he's like, I feel justified. I feel amazing.
Totally.
Yeah, I want more. Funny. Yeah.
So then he goes to calls Penny.
Yeah.
Turns out she reviews movies for a living.
Yeah.
And then he asks her, like, why did you reject me?
Yeah.
And she's like, I was crazy about you. And, you know, basically you rejected me. Like,
yeah.
And then also I didn't agree to have sex with that guy. He actually assaulted her.
Yeah.
Which was actually really dark.
Really dark. But he doesn't see that. That's the awful thing. He's like, oh, all right. Oh, I guess I'm absolved of that one too.
I know. It's weird.
And I guess I kind of broke up with her.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. It's pretty bad.
He does hold on to the static thing. Like, I can actually understand 100% why Laura sort of doesn't see his evolution.
Yeah.
Because he wants so badly just, again, to cling to that single kind of idea of who he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then he goes to meet Sarah.
Yeah, he skips Charlie. He's not ready.
Yeah, not yet. She's too high level.
Yeah.
So goes to see Sarah, but she's so broken.
Yeah.
She's like, I can't believe I left you for this other guy. Are you seeing anyone?
Yeah.
And
just that kind of desperation.
She's like, and I'm not good. Like, that's a great thing. Nothing sexier than just finding out someone's got mental problems. Like, what kind of codependent relationship are you trying to have with this person? Oh. Not a chance. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's on different medication. Like, all the flags. Like, just boo, boo.
Yeah. Yeah. And he, they leave and she's kind of trying to draw him into her apartment. And he's like, no, I'm going. He's
I'm out.
What is the line he says? Like, we could have sex, but having sex with someone like that is like having sex with a mannequin or something.
Pretty much.
Yeah. It's pretty brutal.
It is brutal.
Yeah.
Now it's time to see Charlie.
Yeah.
So calls her up. She's in the phone book. He's mystified by this because he figures like she would be some sort of iconic rock star, living on the planet. Yeah, totally. And he leaves a message for her. Doesn't actually get a chance to connect to her. So back to the store, super busy. And a girl comes in to talk to Dick and she's like, she's looking for a new Green Day album. And he's like, oh, you know, if you like them or The Clash, you know, he talks about the Stiff Little Fingers, plays her song. Her name is Anna. Kind of likes it.
Yeah.
And this is where, and I was... I do this every time I watch this movie.
Yeah.
So then Rob decides he's going to try to sell some of these Beta Band singles. And he plays this song. It's called Dry the Rain.
Yeah.
And he plays the song and people like just start to groove into it. And I'm like, I love that song. I started to groove into it. I actually just put it on a playlist.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So anyway.
But also I have to say that in most parties and most get-togethers, I think one of your joys in life is to curate the music of that night. No, but I love it because that's your thing.
Yeah.
And I think there's moments when you get a song going, and I think that's you kind of scanning around and seeing if people are people are kind of grooving. And I'm sure that must bring you joy when someone's like, I know, I know that. Like whenever you put on a good tune and I'm like, fuck yeah. You know?
There's something really satisfying about it for sure.
Yeah.
We were talking about starting a new podcast just around music and stuff, and we're going to be working on this, but that is for sure. Like one of my great pleasures is to find, even just finding for myself, like a great song. You're like, where was this? Like, how did this get made?
Yeah.
Who is producing it? And 9 times out of 10, it's from some offshoot weirdo, no name band who just like fucking put it together. Like more than once I have felt like someone built a song using my brain, like just built it for me. Like here's what Chris would like salivate over and just like beep, boop, beep, boop and plugged it together. I'm like, fuck. Like I have to go back and like just pick it apart. Like, why is this doing this to me? Anyway, you're going to, we'll start to put those up. Anyway, for sure. I do that.
Yeah. And that's cool though. Like there's real joy to be had in seeing people just all of a sudden like, wow. Where did this come from? And being the curator of that, I'm sure is nice, you know?
It totally is.
Yeah. You're a music shepherd.
You know what? I think lots of people like this though. Like you ask anyone who's got the best taste and they'll tell you it's themselves because you know exactly what you like, right?
Yeah.
And I think people love to share music. Like the experience, anyway, I could go off on a huge like side thing just about where I feel nowadays people are losing their ability to connect to one another. Like, you know, our kids spend so much time just like on their tablets or, you know, watching clips of things.
Yeah.
But it's all insulated. They don't share experiences in the same way. And this is where having people get together and still having kind of music to kind of, you know, narrate the evening.
Yeah.
There's a power to it. Anyway. Yes. So anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Some guys try to steal some albums. They run out. They chase them down.
Yeah.
And they, you know, end up getting the albums back. And Rob is kind of like, forms a bit of a connection with them.
With these two kids, two skater kids. Yeah. That turns out they're
making their own music.
They're called the Kinky Wizards.
That's right. Anyway. So in the meanwhile, though, Laura actually comes to the store. And so then they go back to the apartment, and then she asks about, well, you know, he's reorganizing his stuff.
Yeah.
And then, you know, why is she here? And she's, you know, she feels it's like just hard to discuss thing and try to find a path forward with him.
Yeah.
And he's asking about if there's a chance that if they get back together. But interestingly, she says she doesn't know.
Yeah.
So it's not a no.
Yeah.
I think she's rethinking kind of what has gone on so far. And so she gives him like a 9% chance that they'll get back together. Like, it's a pretty arbitrary number, but you know, it's almost 10%
something.
You know?
Yeah. But he also does this where he becomes kind of fixated on if she has slept with Ian or not.
That's right. Yeah. He's like, is the sex better? Because again, in his mind, he's already had that like
amazing
montage scene. So yeah, for sure, he asks her if they've had sex, and she hasn't yet.
Yeah, and so that gives him a ray of hope.
But she does say that sleeping together, like being in the same bed, is actually better than with him.
Yeah,
like not the sex, but just being cuddled or whatever that means.
Yeah.
So anyway, yes, he feels good that they haven't had sex yet. In fact, he feels great.
Yeah.
So what does he do?
He goes out and sleeps with Lisa Bonet.
That's it. So, and then there's a montage about how they kind of got together and how charming he is and you know what, and she's lovely. And they wake up the next day and kind of have like that weird, like she's cool.
Yeah.
And he's expecting like, what have I done? And and potentially am I punching above my weight again? Like, this is probably something he's thinking about. Like,
oh yeah. But she's no illusions.
Yeah.
She's just like, yeah, this is just a bit of fun. Kind of thing.
Exactly.
So he feels really bad about that. And
I love that he promises to call her and she just laughs.
Yeah.
Like she's like, yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. That's how cool she is. Like, in truth, that would have been a great get to be with Lisa Bonet. Not that being with Laura is a thing.
Yeah.
But if had his life gone in a different direction,
that
probably could have worked out pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
Anyway.
Where do we go? We go back to the shop.
Yep.
I think, whatchamacallit? Is this, isn't when,
So that he's back at the store and he's asking Barry, like he's fixated on this idea that they haven't slept together yet.
Yeah. What would you say?
Yeah. Yeah.
If we haven't seen yet, the like, army is it going of darkness, to happen?
Yeah. That's a great, so Evil Dead 2, right? He's like, what if you said you haven't seen Evil Dead 2 yet? And he's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, I know you've seen it cause it's funny and it's brilliant. I'm like, Evil Dead 2. I love that they're referencing one of my favorite movies. I was like, they are cool. By extension, I want to be as cool as these guys are in their knowledge and kind of understanding of music. And their ability to reference. But anyway, anyway, so Rob convinces Laura to meet him at a bar.
Yeah.
Just sort of like asking, like, you know, what do you want to say? And, you know, can I get you to come back home? And then he's,
Have we had we've had the meeting with Charlie at this point, have we, or no?
I don't know. Not yet. He leaves a message for her.
That's
I haven't met you.
That's right.
Anyway, so he asked her, like, you know, I want you to say you haven't slept with him yet and I want it to be the truth. And she's like, well, I can't do that. So he freaks out.
That's right.
Heads back home and like Laura calls him and... Anyway, he offers to meet again to have another drink, but anyway, whatever. Then you see Laura having supper with Ian, and you can tell, like, life's not great necessarily, but it's also because Rob is harassing the shit out of them.
Oh, yeah, so he's calling them constantly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Ian's getting a little upset.
Totally.
Ray, I guess. Call me Ray.
Call either one. Yeah. He's got a Steven Seagal ponytail.
Oh, my God. Tim Robbins plays Ray. Funny, and he's fucking genius. And he's meant to be, I think his whole job is like...
conflict resolution.
Conflict resolution. So he's like a mediator of some sort. Yeah. But you can see him getting like really freaked out. And so he resolves to go and speak to Rob.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then eventually Rob gets the call from Charlie.
Yeah.
So then she goes. She's like, hey, Charlie Nicholson. He's like, hey, the Rob Gordon.
Yeah.
And then he comes to another realization.
Yeah.
She's like not that great.
She just talks and talks and talks, but has no, just to hear herself talk. Like she is. She through confidence makes her sound intelligent.
Yep.
When really she just says no filter, the first thing off her mind.
Yep. They go to this like whole dinner party.
Yeah.
And you know, he brings a bottle of wine and he just, you know, it's nice because you get to see her in her element with a bunch of her friends.
Yeah.
And that's it. He's like, she's awful.
Yeah.
Awful. I think that's an amazing thing to say that she, you know, says these terrible, his lines, terrible, stupid things and just talks shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's just a black hole.
She is. And so he confronts her.
Yep.
Kind of thing like, why did we break up? And she's like, I knew it. All these guys come looking for validation.
Yeah.
Like when we broke up kind of thing.
But do you think that this happens to people who are beautiful? Like, you know, you've got these amazing people who are out there and they're gorgeous and they're like incredible.
Mm.
I think you don't have to necessarily develop a personality or don't have to be a great person in some respects.
Yeah.
Because people are coming to you anyway. So why bother?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's really kind of sad. Like I always felt like this sometimes, like, you know, I would never date someone so beautiful that you couldn't stand being around them just because they were beautiful. Like,
yeah.
I feel like you'd lose interest.
Your whole world. Well, or just like sabotage it at every given moment, become hyper jealous, become too protective. You become something like pretty ugly, I think.
Yeah. But I don't even know that I would enjoy, like, I'm just saying, like, if you're in those relationships and then the person is someone you can't, like, you're just there because they look so great. Like, is it for your validation that you're like, maybe that makes, by extension, I'm more attractive than I think I am? Maybe. I don't know.
You got to talk to my past girlfriends about that. I mean, I have no frame of reference.
Fair.
Being with a beautiful person.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's interesting.
So, yeah, anyway, he does. He just leaves and then, you know. Whatever. He goes back to the store. So then Barry actually gets approached by someone who says, hey, they finally get someone to come and they're talking about forming a band.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he's got pop sensibilities. This is actually a term I use for myself all the time. Like when you talk about the structure of where your tastes come from.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's because of all of the aerobics music that mom listened to when we were kids. Like now the music they listen to is quite different.
Oh, yeah.
But when we were growing up, it was all pop music.
It was those
K-pop albums where you've got a compilation of a bunch of different tracks from, hits. And she would just like snatch different songs to make into these workout tapes for her exercising. Maybe that's actually part of where I learned to form the ups and downs, because she needed to build energy and then you have to have cool downs when you do exercise and then you need to build it back up again.
Yeah.
So even in some of her crafting, I might have actually absorbed some of that crafting style.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
Anyway, so Barry gives that guy a fist bump. No big deal. Tries to play it down. Dick has a date, so he ends up leaving.
Yeah.
And then basically Rob is alone. So he grabs his bag, leaves the store, closes for the day. And you kind of just like sort of see Dick hugging Anna. And like,
yeah.
I think he sees, this is interesting. I actually feel like he's seeing the people around him evolve.
Yeah.
And this is what maybe forces him to think he needs to evolve. Like in their static world, they've only been part of his life, you know, for a relatively short period of time.
Yeah.
But everyone else is actually developing into different humans.
Yeah.
And Rob, you know, maybe he's starting to take some of this stuff that Laura had told him to heart.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Let's see, where are we?
Yeah. So he's back in his apartment. He's like going over stuff. And then Laura's there again. She's grabbing more clothes and she sees a list that he's made.
Yeah.
Like top five dream jobs.
Yeah.
And I think this is where she sort of says to him, like, again, you used to be interested in like doing more. Like you used to have ambitions.
Yeah.
And
one thing he didn't write on there that was always a dream was owning a record store.
Right.
So she writes it on there for him kind of thing. Wow. You've got one of your top five dream jobs.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, which is really neat.
Yep.
I think then we go to the shop again. Is this where Tim Robbins visits?
Or? Yeah. So actually, there's another quick montage because I think he's actually now really coming back to see that if he doesn't move quickly with Laura and figure something out, he's done.
Yeah.
So he's talking now about the top five things he misses about Laura. So first off, she's got like a great laugh, misses her smell and the way that she tastes.
Yeah.
How she would walk around, how she doesn't care what she projects.
Yeah.
And again, I think he's really now like, he's always kind of taken his females in life for granted.
Yeah.
Like, I think he just kind of has the moments, doesn't really have a very active role, it seems like, in a lot of them. Like, he just kind of, but now he's like really understanding.
Yeah.
And how she half moans when she rubs her feet together to fall asleep. I was like, oh, that's really cute.
Yeah.
That's a really nice thing. Like, I mean, it's, I think when you love someone, you see all the little things. Like, I don't know that it's always like you get hit over the head necessarily with like love, like a bolt out of the blue. But I think it's the cumulative experiences of all the little stuff where you go, oh man, like I can't imagine what life's like without that.
Yeah. Yeah. Then no, that's well put.
Yeah.
I think, I have here next that, we find out Laura's, dad dies.
Right.
But I think that Ian thing is in there. I just have to mention it quick. I don't know where
he comes into the store.
He comes into the store. Sure. It's before we find out Laura's father died. Not right before, but I think it's seen before. Anyway.
Yep.
But Tim Robin comes in to mediate, right, to resolve conflict. And so he goes up to Rob and is like, hey, we need to talk, okay? That kind of behavior, inappropriate. And he starts chatting to Rob.
Yeah.
And then instantly in Rob's mind, He's like, get your patchouli smelling ass out my fucking shop. Right. And he goes back and that was just a fantasy of his.
Yep.
And then another fantasy is he's like, he's about to tear, you know, Ray to pieces and the other guys are holding him back.
Yep.
Right. And that's another fantasy. And then another fantasy where Dick grabs a phone and smashes Tim Robbins' face.
Fucking awesome.
Totally. Spits out all his chiclets.
So good.
Dick with the fucking cash register.
Yep.
So he fantasizes all this ways that that he can shine off Ray, but ultimately he's too much of a puss in a way. And so Ray kind of, you know, pantses him a little and then leaves.
Yep. You also get the part where they were listening to Vince and Justin, who are the two guys that they captured, listening to a song in the store. And this is where the Kinky Lizards thing comes up.
Yeah.
And then Rob decides to take it in a bit more. And then, yes, Laura's dad dies right after that.
He gets a phone call that Laura's dad dies. Yep. And so he's feeling really somber. He feels upset. I think he gets invited to the funeral.
Yeah.
Because she hadn't necessarily said that... to her mom or to her dad that they had broken up.
Right. And Ian's not there, which is another kind of telling sign too.
Exactly. But they have there's a nice little scene where they're all kind of somber and listen to music. And I think they were talking about top five albums to play
at a funeral.
At a funeral.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And then Barry comes up with Laura's...
Leader of the Pack.
And also like Laura's Death Jam kind of thing.
Yeah.
Laura's dad's Death Jam. And Rob goes over and just starts like
shaking the shit out of him. Yeah, totally. But Liz gives like Rob a good piece of advice at the funeral. He's like, she's kind of chastising him and stuff. He's like, I can't go on apologizing my whole life for what I've done. And she says to him, and this is interesting, is like what just once then would do.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's one thing he hasn't done is ever
ownership.
Kind of. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. This isn't me.
No, exactly. Right. Yeah, anyway.
Oh, it's all connected.
It is pretty connected. Anyway,
can't see this, listener, but we have all this red thread that is all interwoven around our space here.
We're through the looking glass.
Yeah, we are. We're drinking our own urine.
Oh, my God.
We're there.
Foil hats. Anyway, so Rob does go to apologize and to say that he's sorry. But, you know, you can definitely see that right now there's a shift. And so they're playing the song by Bob Dylan most of the time, and he's out in the rain, and you can sort of see Laura looking in the mirror, and she's kind of driving around in her sob and stuff, and she ends up seeing Rob at a bus stop.
Yeah.
And, you know, he says himself, and this is true, he's never really fully committed to her.
Yeah.
And it's also prevented him from having to commit to a future.
Yeah.
So this is him, again, trying to stay static. Like, you know, if I don't actually do anything, that I don't have to change.
Mm. He also apologizes to her after Liz tells him that. He actually goes to her and says, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Which is, and then that happens. They end up
having sex in the car.
And
she's like, oh, I knew there was a reason I was going to wear a skirt today. And then, brings kind of, he's back in the fold, right? And they're kissing and he drops him off at his mom's house. And so.
And they're back together.
She
moves in.
Yep.
It all happens really quick.
Yep.
But they're talking about the future. There's good conversation.
It's a disaster.
Yeah. It seems good. He ends up, what happens? He starts to sabotage it again.
Yeah. So there's a girl from Stereo Lab.
She's
looking for Stereo Lab, and she's like, "Hey, are you Bob? You used to DJ. You were great." Oh, yeah. And then he starts making a mixtape tape for her.
Yeah.
And then he catches himself, and he's like, "Hey, wait a minute. Why am I trying to do this?"
Yeah.
And there's something about like this need to run away.
So he invites Laura to for drinks.
Yep.
And he proposes to her.
Yeah. He's like. Yeah. He comments on this. He's like, why am I always jumping from rock to rock?
Yeah.
Feeling like since I met someone new. Yeah. Why do guys have shit for brains? Anyway, it's interesting. He does. At least he's identifying his patterns now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, you see him at the bar. He's nervous about going out. And and then Laura calls him out, right?
Like she does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, why are you making, who's this girl? Why are you making a mixtape for her?
Yeah. Yeah.
She knows exactly what his MO is.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So, he's got to find another passion, another direction. And so he confronts the two guys, Vince and whatever, Chip, whatever their names are, the Kinky Wizards, and says, I'm going to produce your album.
Yep.
Kind of thing. And they're like, what's your label? Top Five Records.
Yeah. It's really cool.
Yeah.
And then this is the last thing, just again, sort of wrap up this thing with Laura, because, he's talking about like, these are always fantasies, but there's never any problems when you think about your fantasies.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, I love this. He's like, I get tired of these things, right? Like, I get tired of the problems and tired of everything else, but I never get tired of you.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool. Like, I mean, that's considering how much friction and how difficult it can be to be in relationships.
Yeah.
I think that that's got to be part of it, right? Like, you just, you got to be with that one person who just doesn't matter the things you have to endure.
Yeah.
The pluses outweigh the minuses so much that it's just, it's evident, right? Anyway, so cut to the bar where they're doing the record release party.
Well, they're planning this and she shows him a flyer.
Yep.
Basically, Top 5 Records is having a launch party for the Kinky Wizards, and the opening act is DJ Rob.
Right? DJ Rob?
Yeah, but there's another act.
There is. It's Sonic Death Monkey. And they're just thinking it's going to be shit. So this is Barry's band that he put together with like that weirdo guy who walked in and said he wanted to be part of it. And of course, they're expecting it to be just a huge disaster. And of course, Jack Black comes out. And he's fucking amazing. He's really good.
Yeah.
He's got kind of a sweet soul song that they're doing right now. And they decided to change the name to something different or whatever.
That's it. Barry Five in the Uptown. No, Barry Jive in the Uptown Five.
Right.
Something like that. And well, the song is Let's Get It On.
Yeah.
Yeah. And does an amazing job of it. And they launch this new, whatchamacallit, this new band, the Kinky Wizards.
Right.
And the movie, and I jumped all over the place. I kind of got it shuffled up, but it ends with him making Laura a mixtape.
Yeah, and stuff that she would like and that would make her happy.
Yeah.
This is his way of committing and kind of stepping outside of his own needs and his own kind of world and being locked into it and now kind of putting things out there. And I think it's a really optimistic way to wrap up the film.
Yeah, it's really cool. And that's it.
And he's like, yeah, for the first time, I could see how it would be done. It's just, it's neat. Anyway.
Yeah, all his playlists have been for him.
Yep.
This is for someone else. Well, like you said, like this is, I think like his playlists were all about him showing his musical expertise and how much he thinks he knows or like his influence on it, where this one's all for her kind of thing. It's all stuff that she would love.
Agree.
And that's the film.
That's the film.
Okay.
Someone set a fire in your car because it took too long and I got bored. Money, please.
So, you know, we've had some pretty interesting businesses, but one thing I noticed is that a lot of celebrities are, you know, hitching their wagon to the old alcohol train.
Sure.
And Cusack isn't immune to that.
No.
Yeah. You know, people
like
have
the Ryan Reynolds booze kind
of. Yeah, you got the Aviator, got, you know, whiskey, you've got
Trump champagne.
Trump champagne. You've got, Breaking Bad, you've got Dos Hermanos or something.
Yeah, Dos Pollos Hermanos.
Pollos Hermanos, who is Bryan Cranston and whoever plays Jesse Pinkman there.
Oh, they're, Aaron.
Aaron Paul.
Paul, yeah.
They have their tequila brand.
Oh.
Right? So all these guys are, even the Rock has booze. That he endorses his own label.
On the rocks.
Yes, it is.
Is that what it's called?
No, that'd be great though.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's called the People's Alcohol.
Oh my God. So what is that? Like Big Bear? Some sort of malt liquor. The People's Alcohol is not very, prestigious.
No. But you know what? John Cusack, he's not above this.
Okay.
You know, he's a refined guy. He's like a martini.
Sure.
You know, and so it makes sense that he would have a component of the martini and his brand, Pushing Gin. Is something to behold. It has quite the 30,000 foot flavor that blasts you right in the Thornton. I wrote this really quickly and don't have a lot of follow up.
That's fine.
But I just want to endorse Pushing Gin.
That's good. I love
John
it.
John Cusack.
That's great.
Yeah. What you got?
So I was actually, because we've done so much John Cusack in this last little bit, I'm inspired and I'm going to start my own side business.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Okay. I think you're going to love this because I'm going to be trying to convince you that you need to get a Cusack. Forget say anything. This thing can do anything. I mean, it's made with high fidelity fibers. If it gets wet, you can con air dry it and it dries instantly. If it rips, you can fix it with tape heads. And you'd be better off dead than to not have one of these in your home. Nothing even holds like 16 candles next to it. It's so amazing. I mean, you might think I'm a grifter, but I'm only charging $14.08 for this amazing bag. It's like I jumped in a hot tub time machine and set my prices to $20.12.
Wow.
You'll be raving about it. You want it. You need it. The Cusack.
Very good. That captures everything.
I just thought it was a nice way to summarize.
All right. Well done.
All right, big takeaways. What do you think?
There's so many.
Yeah.
There's so many, man. I'd be remiss if I didn't kind of make it around music, I suppose.
Sure, go.
And I guess it is about, you know, there's songs that speak to us.
Yep.
And so I'd like to my kids, I guess if I'm talking to my kids, to start to think about where they were when certain songs kind of popped up and what it meant to them. Because you don't necessarily think about that at the time. But I love thinking about it now.
Yeah.
The albums. And maybe you don't recognize that per se, but I'd like to help them just keep part of their brain tuned to it, that certain things, certain events in your life, there's always a soundtrack. There's always something, a companion to that. So I want them to be, I don't know, at least somewhat aware that that is something they could really associate with that time in their lives.
Okay.
You know, so like almost like a blueprint, and it brought me such joy. And I know my kids are pretty musical. I got to, which one, Jack, now and again, I'll rock out some AC/DC.
Oh, yeah.
Kiss. Yeah. Okay. He loves like Kiss songs and things like that.
Hilarious.
Yeah. I don't know where they're hearing it though. That's the weird thing is that like it must be some YouTuber who like samples it or something.
I was going to say, probably.
But honestly, they do. They pull out these odd tunes now and again. And I'm like, oh, hey, I'll listen to that actually when I was a bit younger.
Cool.
Which is interesting. So it's not all contemporary.
Yeah. That's awesome. So I love that.
I just want to reinforce that. And I don't know if there's a massive lesson there. I think it's more just like, hey, be open, and maybe I need to be a little open to the stuff that's influencing them because it's not necessarily my flavor.
Yep.
You know, the whatever the YouTube sample is at the time.
Sure.
You know? So I just got to be cognizant. Anyway.
You know, and that's a really good point, especially because forums like TikTok, for example, have really revitalized a lot of different music. Like I was thinking about that song by Fleetwood Mac, Dreams.
Yeah.
And it had a massive resurgence just based on like it being used in a TikTok video.
Mm.
So it does. It has a huge, I think that's how kids are going to frame things though. Like, you know, what does TikTok do and will it open up doors to have you go back? So I love that it's influenced your kids to do that. That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say like, what is it? Stranger Things season 4, the one song.
Oh my God, the Kate Bush. Running Uphill. Yeah, Jesus. Like, so again, like the power of media now is, who decides?
Yeah.
Well, who decides though? Like who decides what the tracks are going to be or what the music's going to get attached to? It's, it seems arbitrary in many ways.
James Gunn does.
Well, finally, he needs to be in charge of more shit. Like that's, you know.
Yeah, seriously.
Kind of done. So yeah, my takeaway from this one is more just, it's really just focusing on Rob.
Yeah.
Like, I think, again, there's always going to be a temptation to want to keep where you feel the best moments of your life are.
Yeah.
But whether you want that or don't want that, the world's going to move on you and it's going to continue to change and evolve. And it's not the easiest thing. Like we, you know, especially you get confronted with it more, I think, directly when it comes to work, because change management is just one of those things where as dynamics happen, you can't just stay static in your role because other things get introduced and people have different ideas. So the world is changing for you or changing what your environment's like, and you have to adapt with it or else you're going to get left behind. Interesting story. So I think I maybe mentioned this. There's a guy at work that I met. So we had our national meeting in January.
Right.
And I went out there and I haven't actually been in like sales for like a while. And so I was sort of relaying this as we were doing like some work, and this guy asked me, he's like, so, you know, like, why aren't you saying anything? Like, I'm like, oh, you know, I haven't done anything in like 3 years. Like, I haven't actually sold anything. And he's like, what the hell are you doing here? And he was like a total prick to me. I was like, fuck this guy. Anyway, yesterday, he sent out a meeting. Like, we were in this like sort of big group email that was going back and forth. And he's like, whatever, this guy, Jamie, who just had a hip replacement. He's like, whatever, he just got put onto the women's Olympic team. And this is on International Women's Day. And I'm like, as the world continues to evolve, there are still fucking Flintstones who are out there saying
holy
this shit.
Shit.
And to everyone, like his boss was a part of the chain. His boss's boss was part of this chain. Like,
is he getting pulled up?
Well, no. Like one of the managers was like, hey, you know what? Totally inappropriate. Like he totally got squared away. But honestly, it's surprising to me that again, like you how can you not be so aware that things are changing or so stodgy or you know, tone deaf?
Yeah.
That these things don't occur to you. So anyway, like Rob,
yeah,
I think work is one thing where you get pushed to do certain things, and it's not of your own choosing.
Yeah.
But I think you need to take a more active role in sort of looking at where things are going and making sure that you're prepared for it, or making conscious decisions about why you either choose to go with where it's going or not to.
Yeah.
But not to be passive or try to be like a rock in the middle of a stream.
Yeah.
And so I think for my kids, I'm always just like, you may love a thing about where you're at right now, and you may want to hold on to it for as long as you can.
Yeah.
But there may also be a value in like finding out what that change could mean to you, mm-hmm. and whether you might actually enjoy it. You might actually get something out of it, and it can be integrated into the person that you are now.
Yeah.
Or more importantly, who is it you want to become?
Yeah.
So I don't know that, and especially at the ages that our kids are at right now, you know, so many other things are happening. You're just like, oh, like I'm not making these kind of active choices.
Yeah.
But I want them to start to learn to think about what that means. And I guess one of my challenges is always going to be, how do you frame a dialogue for that, that's understandable?
Yeah.
And I don't know that you can do that. I'm really, maybe I mentioned this the last time we were doing podcasting, but I got a really good piece of advice from my trainer, who was just like, support unlimited, but let them fail. And I think I'm going to be framing a lot more of my kind of, you know, discussions around like, okay, it's okay to fail. Go ahead. You know, choose whatever way you want to, but know you have to own those decisions. And then you can come back at least with something tangible and say, hey, look, like, you wanted to do it your way. I totally get it. I'm not judging you for it. But now what do you think about what happened, and what would you do differently, knowing what you know? And maybe that's a more relatable way to help them understand what that kind of change is about. So anyway, this is just trying to philosophically put that all together.
Oh, I love it. Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. That was a really good takeaway. I'm serious. I'm not setting you up for
how we sign this off
and so forth and so forth. But no, that was a really good takeaway.
Thanks.
Before we get to how we finish things, I think the audience, the listener, is desperate to hear our favorite lines that Christopher Walken had in his breakthrough role of Dune 2 as the Padishah Emperor.
It was distracting. I've seen reviews for this since, and people are like, I love Walken in this. I'm like, I could not enjoy him in it. It's like, I was waiting for him.
Sad Walken.
Yeah, exactly.
It was. I want this Muad'Dib dead. There we go.
Yeah. It's anyway, so Dune 2 was great. I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah.
There was lots of stuff, though. I mean, there were things that could definitely be critical about it, and we talked about that coming out. You just rewatched it yesterday. So did you change from the first time you saw it to this time?
Not fundamentally. I still enjoyed it. I saw a little more subtleties and realized I really appreciated the relationship between Chani and actually Jessica. A lot more.
Okay, that's interesting.
Which was neat. And there is like some really great exchanges between the two of them.
Interesting.
But I don't want to get too much into it. But I just I wanted to just do a shout out to Walken.
It's just weird. It'd be like having.
Weird.
Yeah.
It's so weird. Yeah. Anyway. Well, you know, let's finish this.
Sure. Yada yada yada.
Yada yada.
Get your fucking shine box.
Motherfucker.
Nice.
This has been Get Your Shine Box with Chris Hamm and Tristan Hamm. Special thanks to Ross Smith for the intro and outro music. Extra special thanks to the Three Geeky Dads for just being awesome guys. Check out their podcast as well. And if you want to hear past episodes, go to wherever you consume podcasts, even Apple. Bye.